Hello, this is Chris Jerkes reading to you from the March 26th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll start with the first page stories. Tuscola City Council. City approves local events. The Tuscola City Council convened Monday night, approving all items on the consent agenda and receiving several updates on city projects from City Administrator Drew Howell. The Council approved the minutes from the March 10th meeting, the February financial report, and payment of bills totaling $166,000. Additionally, the following requests were granted: approval of the Alzheimer's Awareness Walk at Irvin Park on August 24th, lease of the community building with alcohol for Gilberto Moreno's quinceañera on April 5th, temporary closure of Forest Glen on April 12th for the Kiwanis Easter egg hunt, temporary closure of 100 block of North Court Street for a wedding on September 20th. The council approved an extension of the city's engineering services agreement with Donahoe & Associates. The firm provides on-call support for water and sewer system instrumentation, including the upcoming master meter station project. Mayor Kleiss issued a proclamation recognizing Mentor Day in Tuscola, encouraging residents to engage in mentorship programs to support youth and community development. Administrator's report. City Administrator Drew Howell provided the county with updates on several ongoing projects. The police station. The installation of the epoxy flooring in the garage bay area has been delayed as the flooring subcontract has yet to begin work. However, recent approvals between the general contractor and architect have paved the way for progress. Installation is expected to begin within weeks as warmer weather arrives. Water meter issues continue. Midwest Meter continues to implement patches for the city's meter reading hardware, but erratic collection rates persist. While some days have yielded better results, allowing for fewer estimated readings, Badger Meter, the manufacturer, has not provided a viable solution. The city is actively researching alternative software vendors to improve data collection. Budget process nearing completion. Two of the four committees meetings have held with the Development and Planning and Finance and Administration Committees scheduled for March 25th and March 27th, respectively. A final draft of the budget will be presented into a study session preceding the next council meeting on April 14th. DCEO grant closeout scheduled. A closeout hearing for the DCEO Water Main Grant for Meadowview is set for 6:45 p.m. on Monday before the next city council meeting. Master meter station progress. The site preparations for the master meter station is set to begin next week. Work will include tree removal, pipeline tapping, underground preparation, and the installation of a concrete slab. The prefabricated station is expected to be delivered in mid-April. Road resurfacing plans advance. Designs for resurfacing Park, Washington, and North Central Streets using motor fuel tax funds have been completed and submitted to IDOT for review. The city anticipates opening bids in next summer, with construction expected in late summer. Swimming pool house renovation on track. The city met with architects and consultants last week to finalize renovation plans for the swimming pool house. If approved in the budget, bidding will occur in July, with construction beginning in early September after the pool closes for the season. Surplus equipment sales underway. The city is working to clear storage space by selling surplus equipment. One pickup truck has already been sold to the school district, with another to be advertised for sealed bids in early April. Negotiations are ongoing with local municipalities for the sale of an old bucket truck and leaf machine, while the oldest leaf machine and a 1969 road grader are likely to be scrapped due to lack of market interest. Looking ahead, with key infrastructure projects moving forward and budget discussions nearing completion, the next City Council meeting on April 14th will include a budget study session and further updates on ongoing initiatives. The next article, Arthur Village Board. Arthur tornado sirens fail to activate, by Ariana Cherry. Arthur's tornado sirens failed to activate during the recent severe weather outbreak, Police Chief Dinan reported at the Village Board meeting on March 17th. Dinan told the board that officials were unable to turn on the sirens via their portable radios and were unsure if the issues stemmed from the radios or the sirens themselves. He said the sirens were scheduled for inspection and repairs if necessary, followed by a test to ensure that they were functioning properly. $7,000 grant approved for fireworks show. The Village Board unanimously approved a $7,000 economic development grant for the Arthur Rotary Club's annual fireworks show. Costs for this show have increased 11.2% compared to last year. The fireworks display is scheduled for Saturday, June 28th, and will feature performances by the Mid-American Parachute Club and Captain Rad and the Blind Rivets. Tourism grants. Two local tourism grants were also approved. Simply Arthur received a $3,600 grant for marketing and advertising to promote Arthur tourism. The funds will cover three major ads in the State of Illinois travel publication, Women's Day Magazine, and USA Today. The Illinois Amish Heritage Center received a $2,000 grant to market its Sheep to Yarn to Quilts event. Funding for these grants comes from the village's hotel motel tax fund, which currently has a balance of $19,000. The board also approved $1,049 expenditure to install a new bed with hardcover and lock in the Arthur Police Department's truck, approved total expenditures of $76,000, including the purchase of two new police trucks and a $4,400 payment to Leave It to Us for tree removal. Reviewed the city's financial status, reported that the general fund has reached 81% of anticipated revenue and 64% of expenses so far this fiscal year. Approved a resolution for the annual motor tax fuel estimate of maintenance cost. Discussed signage issues that need to be addressed. The next village board meeting is scheduled for Monday, April 14th. The next article, Arthur School Board, authorizes health life safety replacement option. The Arthur CUSD No. 305 School Board voted unanimously at March 19th meeting to authorize the submission of the Health Life Safety Amendment 13, outlining needs related to full building replacements for areas outlined. Superintendent Cheek reiterated to the board prior to the vote that this has been an ongoing conversation at board meetings for a while, and we do need to just make a decision on how to move forward. Damian Schlitt with BLDD Architects was at the meeting and presented the board with the information. He stated, "We've reached the point where we've been discussing the potential HLS amendment for building replacement. Just give a little background of how health, life, and safety amendments work. Essentially, it's an identification of a current need in a building. It has to be an existing system, one that's one-for-one replacement of that system." He continued, "Up for consideration tonight is Amendment 13 to the high school. The work that we did was actually to walk the facility and identify all the deficiencies again with existing systems and consider those relative to HLS. So again, as we're looking at things with HVAC and those types of items, it's one-for-one replacement. When we're doing this type of amendment, it does start to trigger additional types of work. So once you spend so much money on a campus, the whole campus has to be sprinkled. Because of the breadth of the work that we're considering on this amendment, HVAC systems, electrical lighting, plumbing systems, under-slab work, asbestos tile, all those types of items, they trigger that. Which of these items become expensive as well?" Schlitt explained the way that the state has set up health and life safety is as a threshold that once you cross that, the replacement value of the building, the state can also authorize replacement, which means that you're showing that there's actually more need in the existing footprint than it's worth. He said they've been running those figures and looking through them, and essentially the authorization tonight is we have the math and items outlined with code violations at this point. It then goes to the state for them to review, approve, and provide feedback. If authorized, then the district has permission to raise the funds to implement that work, which in this case, because it's beyond the value of the building, the replacement value, that it would be for to replace the portion of the facility. Schlitt told the board as they were looking at the entirety of the campus, the 1993 gym addition is just not in the condition that would require building replacement, and it was never part of the consideration. The other area is the 1959 wing on the far east side that is not part of this replacement, and the reason being the way the calculations work with the state in showing that need the value of the district to obtain the dollar to replace that wouldn't cover the replacement to those dollars. Schlitt explained, "So we're taking down roughly 60,000 square feet and between the existing gym and the current new wing on the east side, and that additional 60,000 square feet we can support the program that's necessary for the high school, but it'll be all new. So the facade that the building is gone and a new facility will be sitting in its place, essentially linking the two wings." Board members asked what the procedure and timeline would look like going forward, to which Schlitt responded, "After we hit enter on all our end, we would have all of our code violations as we have to show a code violation. This isn't just like I think this should be done. There's a code violation. The urgency on all these is typically a B item, which means that it has to be done in 1 to 5 years. So that's assigned to each of these items. That goes to the Regional Office for Education, and they essentially just hit go, and it goes to the Illinois State Board of Education. ISBE starts to review it, which could take 2 weeks, a month, 6 weeks. I don't know exactly, but there will be some dialogue back and forth. They'll ask us questions. We're going to send a ton of pictures. They're going to ask for a ton more, and we're going to kind of work through all that. Once they say, yeah, you're good, it's approved. That then gives the district the authorization that you now have permission to raise these funds. So either to use your health life safety levy and move the dollars to this capital project or to go out and sell bonds to offset this. Superintendent Cheek reported the district received 5 donations totaling $6,150. They were from Sports Boosters, $5,000, Arthur Rota Club, $500, to National Honor Society, and an anonymous donation, $500, to the Athletics for a stainless steel night sign for the gym. Hydro Gear, $100, to Lovington Grade School Backpack Program, and Methodist Church of Lovington, $50, to Lovington Grade School Backpack Program. In other business, the board took the following action. Approve renewal of the IHSA membership for 2025-2026 school year. Approved an intergovernmental agreement with Lakeland College dual credit. They passed a resolution for an interfund transfer of tort funds to the education fund in the amount of $207,000 due to being assessed an extra payment. The district is part of the Egyptian Trust, which consists of 25 to 39 schools. Superintendent report. Bleachers had visitor side repaired, waiting to hear back about the structure under the press box. Update to cost of bleacher replacement, $600,000. Tile replacement, AHGS. Bathroom tiling issue at high school. Pole and tree down at LGS from recent storm. Current openings, speech and language school, psych, 2 junior high science, 2 high school science, and chorus music. Congratulations to Ms. Rund and the cast of the musical. Justin Brock, extra time put in on weekend. AEA, BOE, meet the candidates night. Mrs. Schrock, seamless transition. Following the closed-door session, the board approved accepted the following hires and resignations. Accepted board member Susie Burkich, letter of resignation from the BOE. Certified. Approved to hire Kaylee Beasley as elementary teacher at AGS. Approved to hire Carly Jones as social worker at LGS. Approved to hire Monica Thompson as junior high ELA teacher at LGS. Approved to hire Adam Reel as high school social science teacher. Approved to hire Joseph Kreck as the district band director. Approved to hire Mitch Wilson as summer school teacher's ed driver and summer school instructor. Extracurricular. Approved to hire Mitch Wilson as the high school head boys track coach. Approved to hire Mitch Wilson as the food pantry coordinator. Approved to hire Sean Davison as the high school track assistant coach. Accepted Mitch Mitchell, letter of resignation, as the high school boys track and field assistant coach. Accepted Dana Tinkle, letter of resignation, as junior high head volleyball coach. Accepted Melissa Schrock, letter of resignation, as the concession stand manager. Douglas County Board opposes proposition of township dissolution by Ben Crane. The Douglas County Board opposed on record the proposed bills in the Illinois State Senate and House of Representatives that would dissolve townships under varying parameters. See the other front page story. Board member Gary Luth led most of the conversation in strong opposition. I'm not usually a fan of the county board diving into political resolutions, but this one directly affects us. House Bill 2515 would dissolve townships with under 500 residents, 2 of which are in my district, and shift their responsibility to the county. That would have a major impact. Even broader legislation would eliminate nearly every township in Douglas County. It's important we go on record opposing it, he said. Other government officials offered their 2 cents, including Douglas County engineer Jim Crane. We oppose any legislation that would eliminate township governments, especially in counties like Douglas that rely on township for road maintenance. If that responsibility were shifted to us without the property tax revenue to support it, we simply couldn't operate. Every county is different, and there's no clear evidence that this would save taxpayers money. Until we have hard facts, I can't support a change that would disrupt essential services and upend local governance, said Crane as he addressed the board. The board also passed an ordinance that would provide public transportation in the county, also passing an amendment to the downstate operating agreement to coincide with each other. The board also passed a resolution, 25R4, amending the predictable fee schedule of the Douglas County Recorder's Office. This was passed to stay up to date with recently passed legislation. Another resolution, 25R5, was passed, canceling the certificate of purchase of parcel 06-04-33-105-005. The board also passed an emergency operation plan for FY 2025 and the execution and amendment of the Section 5311 grant agreement. Finally, the board passed the renewal of a lease agreement between the county and Office of Statewide Pretrial Services and approved a bid to install a panic system at the courthouse, renewal of Office 265 with CDW Government LLC, and reappointed Judy Pollack as Insurance Administration Liaison. In the last first page article, Senator Chapin Rose raises alarm over proposed township abolishment bills, warns of higher taxes and service cuts by Ben Crane. Three new pieces of legislation in the Illinois General Assembly aimed at eliminating or consolidating townships have prompted strong pushback from local lawmakers, including State Senator Chapin Rose, Republican Muhammad, who warns the measure could result in higher property taxes and significant disruptions in essential local services. The proposed legislation, Senate Bills 2504 and 2217, sponsored by Senators Susie Glowiak Hilton, Democrat of Western Springs, and House Bill 2515, sponsored by Representative Joe Sosnowski, Republican of Rockford, take different approaches to township dissolution, but they share a common goal, reducing the number of township governments across Illinois. Senator Rose, who represents a largely rural district in East Central Illinois, criticized the proposals as one-size-fits-all mandate driven by Chicago-area politicians and disconnected from the realities of downstate communities. This is a classic example of Chicago politicians trying to fix something and not fully understanding all of the ramifications of the change, Rose said during a recent press conference in Springfield. In this case, many of my constituents will see their property taxes go up because these services just don't disappear. Counties and municipalities will be forced to pick up the slack at higher costs, meaning higher property taxes or major service cuts. Overview of the legislation, Senate Bill 3504, Glowiak Hilton. This wide-reaching bill proposes to abolish the offices of township and multi-township assessors in counties with populations under 50,000, transferring those duties to the county assessor. It also opens the door for township dissolution and consolidation statement, formerly only permitted in McHenry County, via voter-initiated referendums. Upon a petition signed by at least 5% of voters from the last township election, townships could be dissolved or merged with neighboring townships or municipalities. Senate Bill 2217, Glowiak Hilton. SB 2217 proposes an even more sweeping change. It mandates the automatic dissolution of all townships with populations under 5,000. Those townships will be required to consolidate with an adjacent township or be absorbed into the county that encompasses them. House Bill 2515, Sosnowski. HB 2515 takes a more narrowly tailored approach, targeting only townships with fewer than 500 residents. These would be dissolved within 2 years of the law's enactment, with all property assets, personnel, and responsibilities transferred to the relevant county. Road districts within these townships would also be dissolved, with road maintenance and related services taken on by the county or optionally by municipalities within the township boundaries. Senator Rose, local governments ill-prepared for the burden. Senator Rose expressed particular concern over the fate of road maintenance and emergency response in rural areas, where county governments may lack the equipment or personnel to take over responsibilities currently handled by township governments. I have entire counties that don't own a single piece of road equipment, not a grader, not even a snowplow, Rose said. Now, if Pritzker gets his way, these services will fall back into the county, except it will be much more expensive to deliver. Rose warned that counties lacking the infrastructure and staffing of decentralized township operations will be forced to contract out services at prevailing wage rates, paying overtime during storms, and scramble to fill gaps in equipment and workforce, which would drive up costs for taxpayers. Your local road commissioner is already on retainer, whether it snows once or 10 times in a winter, he added. At the county level, they will have to hire that labor at prevailing wage plus time and a half to stay on duty during a blizzard and then do it again when the next storm comes through. Efficiency or overreach? While Rose emphasized his own track record of supporting government consolidation, where it is truly locally driven and supported, he criticized the current legislative push as a top-down initiative that ignores the unique needs of rural Illinois communities. I've always been advocating for streamlining government and making it more efficient, Rose said. I've supported legislation to give voters the ability to consolidate local government units where it makes sense to local citizens. However, what Governor Pritzker is pushing is not about efficiency. It's another one-size-fits-all approach from the top down. Rose said that essential services like snow removal, road maintenance, cemetery care, and even township-run libraries would be jeopardized under the new legislation, especially if the state fails to provide counties with adequate resources to take on the new responsibilities. What's next? As the bills move through the legislative committees in both chambers, the debate is heating up between proponents of consolidation who argue it would reduce bureaucracy and cut costs, and opponents like Rose who say that state risks destabilizing vital local services and shifting costs onto already burdened taxpayers. For now, Township officials and residents across Illinois are watching closely as the future of their local governments may soon be up for debate and potentially for dissolution. Have thoughts on township consolidation? Contact your local legislators or submit a letter to the editor. We'll move now to the obituaries. Janet L. Jurgens Winningham, 87, took the hand of her Lord and Savior Jesus, surrounded by her loving family at 8:31 p.m. on Wednesday, March 19th at her home. We are heartbroken by her passing, but celebrate her wonderful life. A memorial service honoring Janet's life will be held at Edwards Funeral Home in Arcola on Saturday, May 10th at 4 p.m. Visitation will be 2 hours before the service. Jeff Knight, 58, of Tuscola, passed away from complications of a sepsis infection on March 20th, 25, at 11:34 p.m., surrounded by his closest family at Barnes Jewish Hospital in St. Louis, Missouri. Services celebrating his life will be held at 5 p.m., Wednesday, March 26th, at the Tuscola First Christian Church, 100 East Church Street, Tuscola. Visitation will be held from 2 to 5 p.m. on Wednesday at the church. Please wear casual attire. Jeff will always be wearing shorts and wouldn't want it any other way. Arlie Jones of Aurora, formerly of Tuscola, passed away on March 21st, 2025. Funeral services will be held at 10 a.m. Wednesday, March 26th at the Emmanuel Lutheran Church, 200 East North Line Road, Tuscola, with the Reverend Jason Broughton officiating. Burial with military honors, gravesite will be at Cordo, will be in the Tuscola Township Cemetery. Visitation will be held 1 hour prior to the service at the church. Wanda I. Day, age 98, passed away Wednesday, March 5th, 2025 in Marengo. The family requests any memorial donations be made to Florence Nursing Home in Marengo, Illinois. James Harold Green died unexpectedly the afternoon of March 18, 2025. Graveside services were held Saturday, March 22nd at the Newman Center in Newman. Pastor Justin Smith officiated. Memorial donations may be made to the Douglas County Humane Society. Mary Ann Daly, age 84, passed away peacefully at home in Arthur, surrounded by her family on Thursday morning, March 20th, 2025. A celebration of life with no formal service was held at Mary Ann's honor at the Arthur United Methodist Church on Monday, March 24th. Donna D. Gear McCullum, age 78, Falls River, Wisconsin, passed away peacefully on Monday, March 17th, 2025 at Our Savior's Senior Living in Falls, River Falls. A memorial visitation was held on Saturday, March 22nd at Bakanyang Funeral Home and Cremation Service in River Falls. A memorial and interment service will be held in Arcola at a later date. Interment will be at the Arcola Fellowship Cemetery. The next article, Knowles and Clark go head-to-head for Arcola Township Supervisor. Dale Knowles, age 61, operator-owner of Knowles Automotive Incorporated. He was 1882 graduate of Mattoon High School, 1984 graduate of Lakeland College. Married with two daughters, two stepsons, and three grandchildren. He's been on the Arcola Township Trustee for the past 24 years, served at Arcola United Methodist Church in various ministries, two-time part master of the Arcola Masonic Lodge No. 366 and current member, former member of the Arcola Lions Club. What prompted you to run for Arcola Township Supervisor? I've been a trustee for 24 years and I felt compelled to challenge myself to run for a new position within the township. What do you believe qualifies you to be the Arcola Township Supervisor? In my opinion, local government functions as a business and serves the community. I believe my 24 years of experience as a township trustee and owning and operating my own business for 27 years, all while working closely with the community, give me the qualifications to function in the supervisor's role. What goal do you hope to accomplish if elected? To continue to find ways to make sure the Arcola Township allotments of the tax dollars are used wisely and in the best interest of the taxpayers in the township, making improvements where you're able. What do you feel are the top challenges that the township is facing? Soon to expire TIF district extension, new buildings for township office due to building condition in downtown area, and township shed due to space issues related to nearby business growth, and the legislators been introduced a new state level to abolish townships. John Corky Clark, age 80 year, lifelong residence, graduated from Arcola High School in 1962, Eastern Illinois University in 1966, licensed real estate broker and licensed real estate appraiser. Father to four boys. Civic Improvement was the Township Supervisor 2009 to the present, TIF Advisory Committee 2011 to present, Arcola Masonic Lodge 336 member, Arcola First Christian Church member, deacon, and elder for 50 years. Arcola Alumni Association Distinguished Alumnus 2023, President of Arcola Fire Protection District 2000 to 2018, Arcola Broomcorn Festival Grand Marshal, past Arcola School Board member, past Lions Club president, 1971 to 72, past Arcola Sports Booster president. What prompted you to run for Arcola Township Supervisor? Being the present Arcola Township Supervisor, I would like to be elected for another term. What do you believe qualifies you to be the Arcola Township Supervisor? With 16 years of Arcola Township Supervisor experience behind me, plus 50 years of Arcola civic involvement, I would like to help Arcola continue to grow. What do you feel are the top three goals and challenges facing the township? Being able to work with the city of Arcola, keeping our road districts and township in rural areas from being eliminated by the state of Illinois, keeping expenses in check to help with lower taxes, monitoring our general assistance program to benefit those who are in need living in Arcola Township. The next article, four candidates seek seats on the CUSD 301 Board of Education. Jeffrey Jeff Mills, age 54, co-owner of Commercial Collision, situated in Champaign, our establishment specialized in providing comprehensive auto body repair services for large commercial vehicles. He was a graduate from the class of 1988 of Tuscola Community High School. The second candidate, Jesse Young, age 44, occupation marketing manager at CCMSI, education, Illinois State University graduate, bachelor's in marketing with a minor in economics. Civic involvement, Cura Tuscola, CUSD number 301 board vice president, served on the board for 6 years, Eastern Illinois Area of Special Education, board representative for Tuscola 4 years, Douglas County Animal Shelter, social media, and pet finder volunteer. Administrator, 15-time fighter of Impact Life blood donor, Impact Melanoma donor, and emotional support volunteer. The third candidate, Rusty Yantis, age 43, Ag sales for Mid-State Tank Company. Education, graduated from Findlay High School, class of 2000, Lakeland College Ag Business. I am currently on Tuscola CUSD 301 School Board. I was Tuscola Little League President, Tuscola Softball Coordinator, Tuscola Biddy Basketball President, Okaw League Softball and Baseball President, Okaw League Softball and Baseball Treasurer, and Findlay Feeders 4-H Club Leader. And the fourth candidate, Jessica Ray, age 43, occupation physical therapist and multi-site clinic director for ATI Physical Therapy. Bachelor's of Science in Kinesiology from the University of Illinois and Doctorate of Physical Therapy from the University of Indianapolis. Civic involvement, Tuscola Rotary Club, clerk and member of the Lake Fork United Church of Christ. And the final article, Venison is Game Changer for Fighting Food Insecurity by Hannah Spangler. Hunters Feeding Illinois is taking a shot at tackling food insecurity throughout the state by connecting hunters, meat processors, and food pantries. During the 2024-2025 deer hunting season, the program provided 24,000 pounds of venison to 54 local food pantries. Hunters donated 584 deer to 20 local meat processors, increasing access to lean protein across central and southern Illinois. All of the venison that is donated stays local, which we're really proud of, and the funding that is raised also stays local, said Caitlin Straitmeyer, Senior Manager of Illinois Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, SNAP, Education, at University of Illinois Extension. It's hunting that's happening locally, supporting our local families and meat processors. The process starts when a hunter donates meat to a local food processor. Straitmeyer noted that the program helps address the deer nuisance issue, especially in areas where hunting is popular and venison is relevant to the community. Hunters who have more meat than they need can donate it to families in their community. This is a way that hunters can use their passion for hunting and then give back to their community by donating the excess deer they are unable to use at home, said Meredith Props, U of I Extension SNAP education educator. Following the donations, Feeding Illinois financially supports the food processors who turn harvested meat into ground meat. Props explained that in the past years, U of I Extension would reimburse meat processors, but partnering with Feeding Illinois helps the reimbursement process run smoother. With our partnership with Feeding Illinois, they can actually reimburse our meat processors on a monthly basis, a weekly basis, or however many invoices the meat processors send to Feeding Illinois. They're able to reimburse on more of a streamlined and faster process than what our process was 2 years ago, Props told Farm Week. Straitmeyer added that the deer donation program included in Illinois State Bill 2620-2160 would further streamline the reimbursement process. If passed, the legislation would establish the Hunter's Food Bank to support grants for food banks to pay for process for donated deer. That is all we have time for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.